dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISOs, RAM, SIP, SIP. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 152, coming to you on 6/13/2006. See, I always have a problem when I see a numeric date, 6/13. I have to actually count in my head. This is how messed up I am. I have to think January, February, March, April, May, June. June 13th, 2006. I am Stank Dog, back with you again this week. And we have a new first-time co-host on the show this week.
Hey, guys.
That people might know. Seal. Yeah, people will know the name from the forums of Seal. But you also actually have, I know a lot of people don't realize this, but some of us have real names. Are we using a real name on the show? Are we going to stick with just Seal, or what did we decide on that?
I think it was Seal, a.k.a. Julian, so whichever one we go by works by me.
And, of course, Julian, a.k.a. Seal, of the new piracy documentary on piracy. Actually, what is the full official title?
The title is On Piracy, Radio, and Walmart, with a purposely put S after Walmart so I wouldn't be sued by Walmart.
Oh, interesting touch there. I don't know. Hopefully that works.
Probably not, you know, but just hopefully this stays under the radar.
Right. And actually, we're going to talk about that piracy documentary as today's main topic, but just for some of you who may have been away for a while and are coming back and just listening to 152 is the first episode you've heard in a while, you might not realize that we have been doing a little bit of format change to the show. So the last few episodes, we've been moving into a new format, like I said, where we're going straight into the main topic because we want to make sure that we get plenty of time to talk about the main topic. We don't want to get a cut off early. We want to make sure it gives it all the attention that it deserves, topic or topics. And today's main topic is, as I just said, the piracy documentary by our co-host Seal. So we're going to move right into that main topic. And as you just heard, there's the name of the documentary on piracy, which can be found at piracydocumentary.com, right?
That's exactly right.
Why dot com? Why not .org or .net or whatever? Why'd you choose .com? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, you know what? Because, you know, .com sounds all professional, and people think that, you know, if you're .net, then somehow your website is less professional somehow. It's all this psychological warfare thing I'm trying to do.
Yeah, and, you know, I find this question. See, we're already branching off onto another topic. I always have these tangents. One of the hardest things, I know it sounds silly, is choosing a good name. It's like, I'll sit there sometimes and think, what should we call this site? Should it be a .org or a .net? You know?
Yeah,
it's
I know.
How do you decide?
Well, you know what? Here's an easy way. Go by the price. .coms are like $8 now. Can't go wrong.
Ah, sorry, I was taking a little sip of iced tea there. And while, you know, as long as I'm on the off-topic subject, I went to get my iced tea out of the refrigerator, and it's frozen. I guess my refrigerator's too cold, and it's a frozen block, so I have to kind of wait for it to melt while the show goes on. I guess I can set it on top of the monitor. It'll melt quicker. Of course, that's kind of dangerous. If you hear a loud explosion, it's because my tea spilled into the monitor and blew it up. Anyway, all right, so let's stick to on topic. First of all, this is not the first time that you've done some film work. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I did, throughout high school, some videos, and then I did something which was called the Ento Show last year, which was a sort of computer basics educational film. You might, I think you said you saw a few clips of it?
Oh, yeah. I remember you put it in the forum a while back, and I like, is this the one where you did it, where you had the split screen, where you were talking to yourself, you're like, hi, Julian, how are you? You're a handsome man, or whatever you were doing.
Yeah, I was the laughing stock of my family for about 3-4 months after that.
Yeah, but it was funny. It was funny. That was good stuff.
Thanks.
Yeah. So, like, are you into, so because of these two things together, I guess this is a natural question, is this a hobby, or are you actually studying film in school, or is this something that you're just doing for the fun of it?
I'm actually a physical geography student here at the University of Ottawa, so I have no educational backdrop in film whatsoever, but it is becoming a hobby, and I foresee that as soon as I finish this movie here, because it's not done quite yet, that I'll do another movie on God knows what else. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a hobby for me from now on.
So when you say your next topic, do you have something in mind you're not telling us, or you haven't decided yet?
I have, like, 4 movies on the back burner. I can never say this word right. Back burner. But, yeah, you know, I really don't like thinking about a next project before one's done, or else I'll never get the one I'm working on done at all. But sort of like hacking fiction movie, that would be fun. That'd be nice. I haven't seen one of those yet.
Yeah, that would be, you know, we actually kind of talked about that too, but man, people don't realize how much work is involved in putting this stuff together, not just the filming, but especially a fiction. You actually got to write a story, you got to write dialogue, or at least somewhat of a shell of dialogue or plot, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you do Hack TV and Hack TV Underground, so you know all about that, too.
Oh, my gosh, you don't even... And I totally understand what you're saying about biting off too many projects at once, too, which is why we're trying to rein stuff in right now. But that's neither here nor there. So, yeah, the video editing itself, I know, takes a long time, and there's a... And I think I've said this on the show before, there's a skill to it that I don't have. I'm not good I'm just being honest. I'm not. That's why, you know, the first one was done by my friend Saito, who taught me what little bit I do know about it. And then Dr. Zygmunt, that's actually how he and I met, is that he knew a lot of the video editing, and he helped out on the other episodes of Hack TV, which is why they ended up so good. If I do them, I mean, I could get them done, but they really wouldn't be close to the quality that what we ended up putting out. I mean, he does a fantastic job mixing it together. We work together on the, you know, how it's going to flow and what we're going to include and not include, the editing process, but he actually does the actually cutting, editing, producing of the thing, which is what I'm not good at that. I'm not good at art. I swear to you, this is not a joke. I can't use Photoshop. I'm too dumb. I really can't. There's so many buttons and layers and all these different... it's too complex for my small American brain to handle. I really can't handle that. I think it was invented by Canadians. Ooh! Oh, he snuck in a Canadian joke. Look at that. Oh, no. No, I really am bad at graphics. I'm just a fact of life I have to deal with. I can't do design and graphic work. So, hey, what are you going to do? But that's why I was curious if this was something that you were pursuing, because you do seem to have a skill at it. You were doing some clever video tricks. They were, you know, I don't know if the proper word is cinematography. Talk about a hard word to say. The cinematography, some of the ways you were, you know, just silly things like where you set the cameras up in some of those interviews and shots like that. It really makes a difference whether the camera's across the room, whether it's at an angle. If you film somebody looking from above, looking down on them, versus looking up at them or from the side, it makes a different feel to the video. It really does.
Yeah, you're right. And, yeah, I was going to say something and it totally escaped my mind, so I'll let you continue on there.
Well, no, it's just there's a lot of little things like that that you can just set the camera up and film stuff, but it's an extra... You can see those extra touches and the decisions that you made in this particular documentary that actually make it good. And there's other shows and movies out there that aren't good, and we won't go there. But I think you did a really good job on this one, so I'm actually looking forward to what you do next. But you know what?
Thank
I'm going to kind of jump to another question here, because when we say, you're saying jump to the next one and this one not being finished, did I see that this is technically the one that you do have on the website is version 0.8? I mean, is this not complete?
That's exactly right. The movie that I have right there is still under scrutiny and editing. There's a last interview that I'm doing with a company that rhymes with Microsoft. And yeah, so I'm trying to get them on there and to get the sort of pro DRM standpoint. So there's that interview I need to get in there, and I also need to do lots of editing, cutting it down. There's a scene in there, I don't know if you remember, but that part where the Magnitude guy, John Buckman, is talking.
Right.
And what you see there is photos of him, photos after photos, because I really had no other footage. Well, one of my friends commented that that looked like I was doing like a sort of homosexual homage to John Buckman.
Okay.
So, which was a very valid argument, but it does, you know, mean to say that there is some parts I really do have to work on.
Alright, yeah. So the one that's out there right now is not necessarily the final version. Obviously you'll keep us updated and we'll mention it on the show, and I'm sure you'll let us know in the forums when you do get a final one out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe in a month from now. I just wanted to get something out. I was really strapped for cash, and so I released 0.5 on Dig, and that got me the donations I needed to sort of buy the music I needed to get on there.
Well, and actually, that leads to another good question. You say that you needed money to get the music on there. I mean, did you actually have to buy rights, or did you use, ironically, I mean, you mentioned Creative Commons. I was wondering about what. Will you just tell me how did you handle music in the documentary?
Well, here's the way I looked online at Creative Commons, and one of the best resources for Creative Commons, where you have direct access to the musicians, which is what I needed, is Magnitude. And initially I thought, okay, you know, it costs more if you want to use it for a movie. And initially it was like $100. And I'm like, okay, that's a shitload of money. I'm sort of, you know, my bank is going to send collectors after me in 2 months if I don't pay them back. So that was, you know, sort of expensive and whatever. And then I check up when towards the end of the production and they raise the prices to about $500.
Woo!
So, yeah.
Nice.
So Creative Commons is not free, because, like, as soon as you submit your movie to a festival, that is considered commercial use. So there's all these things. So what I did is I went to royaltyfreemusic.com, which did remain at, you know, the $100 price level, and bought a few of their CDs. And, you know, that was thanks to donations from very generous people.
All right. That's very interesting. I had no idea. Now, this is because you submitted it to a film festival, you said, or?
Well, because I wanted to keep my options open, and I did not want to have to change the whole soundtrack on the pure virtue of me submitting to a film festival. I didn't want that be a deterrent, so I just decided to go with that. And I also had public domain music, but that turned out interesting. Some of it wasn't actually under the public domain as I thought it was, and that led to interesting situations.
Well, can you go into any detail about that, or is that a off?
Sure, no.
Because I did notice that you mentioned that the closing song during the closing credits, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And the song was "Ain't Misbehavin'" by Louis Armstrong, and it was that recording came from 1929, and the guy who did it is dead and has been dead for 50 years. So the song itself is under public domain. But the recording that was done, because Louis Armstrong himself died 30 years ago, is still not in the public domain yet, so there's 20 years to go. So I got a call one day when I was at work from the head of one of the agencies in Canada that's responsible for collecting fees off this. He's basically like, yeah, I don't want to be the bad guy here, but your last song, yeah, it violates copyright. So after about, you know, walking in circles for, you know, 30 minutes and being super scared, you know, all those legal troubles that scare the living shit out of you, there's your R-rated warranted right there. And, so I, you know, took it all down and changed the music.
And I'm sure that was that kind of phone call would freak me out a little bit, so. And ironically.
Scared the living shit.
Yeah, ironically, sure. The topic of the documentary, you know, mentioning the music and all that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah. So did he, did he stumble across it by accident? Or, I mean, how did he actually find out that one of his clients or whoever that he represented, how did they find out that you used their music? How did it get back to him, do you know?
Yeah, well, what I suspect happened, because he had my phone number as well, and my phone number's not exactly published all that well. What I suspect is that I had given copies to all the people that were involved, all the interviewees, and one of the people I interviewed was a child organization which works under this guy here, and I suspect that the president of that organization noticed that and gave the heads up and my contact information to this guy.
Oh, man. This is one of these cases, this is a case where I'm biting my tongue right now, I want you to know this.
Yeah,
let me say it.
Wrong, and it's better to have that resolved now than find out later when, you know, there is possible commercial interest involved, and better now than later.
Yeah, but I'm going to word this in I'm going to do a little social engineering trick and word this in such a way that it's not negative. I'm going to just say that it would have been cool if they would have said, hey, we know who you are. We know your documentary. We're giving you permission to use the song. That would have been cool if that would have happened. That's all I'm saying.
Oh absolutely.
Instead of the threat. How ironic is it to send the copyright threat after you just interviewed somebody about copyright? I mean...
Yeah, I know.
Damn, help a brother out. Jeez. All right, anyway, I won't go there because I don't want you to get any more phone calls from them. So... we will move on. Now, we kind of went in this direction earlier about what your next films or, you know, what you decide. How did you actually decide to do this film? I mean, what about this topic made you decide to do it?
I always wanted to do two films. One of them was, I always wanted to do this film from the get-go last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when I was doing Ento, I knew that, you know, I was going to do this one after. So I began this one actually in May of last year, and it's taken a year to complete. And the whole interview thing is actually because of Strom Carlson, who sort of really helped me, sort of point me in the right direction for that. Little does he know, but he did.
How so?
Well, basically, I had worked for 2 months doing research on this, or actually 4 months, but 2 months writing the script.
Mm-hmm.
And the script was somewhat... I think how Strom put it was that it felt like he was being bludgeoned on the head repeatedly, which was a very accurate depiction of the script, because trust me, it was pretty bad. And from that point on, I decided to do it, you know, 100% interview based. It's worked out for the best, and I'm really grateful for Strom for having said that.
Well, when you say script, now let's kind of clarify, because that's a little confusing. It's a documentary. Why is there a script, or what is scripted?
Because originally the movie was going to be sort of an hour long rant as opposed to a fair and balanced documentary. That's why.
All right, gotcha.
But there's still a script. I mean, you know, you have to have a basic idea of how to put these interviews together, and you have to have, you know, once you've collected, you know, all the footage, you have to have a rough idea of how to, you know, put it again together afterwards as well, so... there is no script for this movie.
Well, and you know what? I mean, it's very similar to the show novels that I'm so famous for, which you have. You know, it's not necessarily a script, but you put together a list of topics or specific questions or something like that that you want to touch on or stuff you don't want to forget. So it's not like it's scripted, so let's not give anybody the impression that your documentary is scripted, but I'm sure you had a list of a bullet point of, I want to ask this question, I want his opinion on that question, or how do you respond to this common allegation? Because that's another good thing is what you did is you did these, I'll refer to them as street interviews for lack of a better word, and then you'll cut over and like the street interview with somebody will say, oh yeah, well CDs cost too much and they only have one good song on it, it's not worth it. And then we'll go over to the record exec trying to justify that question.
Yeah.
So...
But to be honest, like that was, thank God for Graham Henderson, who's the president of the CREA, because he actually he's the one who sort of suggested some of these answers, or these questions, and had he not done that, because I didn't even think about those three people interviews back then, had he not done that, I would have had nothing on him, so, you know, And he was a really cool guy, by the way. He's a really nice guy. I know everyone's going to grunt when they say this, when they hear me say this, but he's a really cool guy.
Interesting. Very interesting. I guess that's cool to hear, but I guess, well, people need to watch the documentary and then remember that you just said that, because that's, that takes some... Yeah, we'll leave it at that. So what about now, another one of our good friends of the show, Jason Scott, also did a documentary not too long ago, about a year, within the past year, his BBS documentary, which was also fantastic, and we, you know,
absolutely
supported and pimped it out. Did that have any effect, or had you already begun the process, or did that motivate you or have any effect to make you say, wow, he did one on BBS, I've always wanted to do one on piracy? Did it go like that, or did you already have the idea, or...
Sort of both of the above. Jason Scott did, you know, his BBS documentary is absolutely incredible, and I've watched it, you know, three times since I've bought it. And it certainly had an impact. I sort of mirrored my website on, you know, the format he did his. Mm-hmm. And the whole Creative Commons thing is pretty much an influence of his. The way he used interviews like that is an influence of his. So yeah, he's had a big impact. But had he not been there, I think I would have still done this movie nonetheless and released it for free nonetheless.
Yeah, and you know, again, the Creative Commons, we've used that from day one for everything that we do in DDP. The whole, all of Binary Revolution Radio, this episode all the way back to episode one, Hack TV, everything else that we put out in digital format, our articles, whatever, is all released under Creative Commons. Now, actually, this, I'm glad this is a good thing. I don't think we've gone into Creative Commons. We went into it a little bit on past shows, but people hear Creative Commons, and sometimes they hear, and this is not valid, but there's a lot of people simply hear Creative Commons, oh, so it's free and public domain. That's not exactly what Creative Commons is. I could explain it a little bit, but why don't you go into it a little bit more?
Sure. Well, what Creative Commons is basically writing out the contract of the copyright license out so that people can understand it and know what their rights are with copyrights. So, for example, if you release media, by default, it's under copyright. And by default, copyright means all rights reserved, which means that if someone else wants to make use of that work, let's say they want to make a remix of a CD and they've got that CD, by default, they're not allowed to use that content and publish it publicly. What Creative Commons does is that it identifies what the person can do or say. So it's not public domain. It can be, because you can say, you know, oh, I want my stuff released entirely for free. But what it really is just saying what exactly you can do with the product. So it can be really restrictive as well. It doesn't have to be completely open, but it's just making it clear to people for people to understand, and I find that's fantastic.
Yes, I agree completely, and I do know that people have that misconception, so that was a great explanation. Now, our particular one, again, that we use for the show and Hack TV and such, is one that says you can do whatever you want with this as long as you don't, A, sell it and make money off of it, because we don't, you know, so we don't want anybody else doing it, and secondly, that they simply don't strip the names and credits off, but they're freely, can distribute it, they can put it on their own website, they can burn it to CD and hand it out, all that kind of good stuff. So basically defines, instead of saying, I reserve all rights, I get the decision of every single thing that somebody wants to do, I have the control, and it breaks it down and says, I'm going to go ahead and tell you up front that I'm giving you these controls back. That's what our Creative Commons says. You can do this with our stuff. We only reserve a little bit of control that says, don't sell it and make money off of it. That's really the biggest part of it for us. But there are others that will further break it down that says that, no, you cannot. That you can, in fact, sell it and make money. There are some that say that you can alter and transfer and build upon this work, which is, I think, more along the lines of what Jason Scott did. I don't want to talk for him or put his Creative Commons out there, but I'm pretty sure what he's done is he put up all the individual interviews as well, so that if, and again, I'll correct myself next week, Jason Scott, if you email me if I say something wrong here, but I think by putting up all those individual things, sure, he made a documentary with all of them, putting them together in his format. But let's say, well, let's use yours for an example. You could have, if you wanted to, if there was an interview from his that was useful, you could have used that and put it into your documentary.
Actually, I might have to check up on that. The reason I say that, and I don't mean to, like, go counter to what you just said, but
by all means,
Creative Commons, if he chose a share alike license, my license is actually quite restrictive. I'm not allowing people to take footage of mine and edit it for pure reason that I'm afraid of being sued by someone who's pissed off of seeing his interview footage and big smiley face on it.
Right.
And so if it's share alike, then I'd have to have the same license as him.
Right. Oh, okay. I understand. So it is true that he may make it, but that doesn't necessarily mean you can't change it from what he had it to. If you use it his, you have to maintain his license.
But nonetheless, I mean, like, yeah, what he did on archive.org by releasing those interviews is fantastic.
Right.
That's insane.
Right.
That's
no, great. I understand completely. I mean, our reason for saying not to alter is simply because we know damn good and well people will strip off the names and put their name on it and put it out there somewhere. So there's lots of reasons to make your decision of which Creative Commons license you use, and they're all perfectly valid. But that's the great thing about it is that you do have that control.
And it's all free, and there's great people out there to help you out should you need help on forums and so forth.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the, at least in my opinion, that was one of my favorite interviews from the documentary, was with the Creative Commons guy. I hate to say, I should be more professional. If this was a real radio show, I'd actually say his name, but I'm sure you'll tell us.
Yeah, Marcus Bornford.
There you go. So, see, that's where having a good co-host on here, because he knows what he's talking about, and I just limp my way through the show, so. But that was one of my favorite interviews on there, seriously. That was one of the best ones, I thought. And he gave a good, clear explanation.
Yeah, he's a fantastic guy. There was a huge conference in Ottawa on the subject of Internet piracy last year. And that's where I got his contact info, and I had a discussion with him. And he's a very bright individual. Knows what he's saying. But it sometimes can be a little long saying it, so there's actually lots of heavy editing for his interview. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, that goes back to the time, editing time necessary. So, I don't want to throw this out there. I guess we can edit this out if need be, but did I hear you mention something about presenting somewhere with Jason Scott?
That's right. I'll be at the Hackers on Planet Earth conference in July, this coming July. And we're doing a talk on... I forgot what the title of the talk is now. We had set a decent one out, but it's on how to make documentaries, pretty much, and how to get, you know, these contacts, these big people, or people you think that are big, and getting them to be filmed. And there's lots of social engineering involved in some cases. There's lots of honesty in other cases, but that's basically what we'd be talking about.
Well, not to steal any thunder from that, but I was kind of wondering, how did you get these people to participate? You know, I mean, they're taking time out of their schedule for some, no insult, but some schmuck kid that they don't know. It's like, why should they get, you know, how did you get their time?
Social engineering all the way. Here's the deal, right? I am in Ottawa, 500 kilometers away from 90% of these people. So they don't know what I look like yet. If they saw what I looked like, this, you know, punk-ass 20-year-old, I bet you I wouldn't have, you know, they wouldn't have even considered it. But, yeah, I've got the advantage of the phone. And so I can make myself sound bigger than I am. And with emails, if you word them correctly, and if you're, if you write intelligently, you know, you don't use any text speak, or you don't use you are and with a you
right.
and an R instead of your,
right.
You can give a very good impression. Now, it becomes interesting once they finally do see you, and then they're like, where's the rest of your crew? Or they give you, you know, the, it's you.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I got all the interviews nonetheless, and some people wanted to stay and chat, and it was a good experience. It was a really, really good experience. And these people cared, and they all treated me with respect once I got there. It was fantastic.
Well, were there any people that did not or refused interviews or gave you any trouble or revoked their interviews or anything like that happen?
Oh, yeah, tons. There's about 24 interviews, and I've tried contacting maybe 70 people.
Wow.
It's Apple turned it down, but they were nice about it. I think the people that were sort of the least pleasant to deal with were the CN Tower. And I'll make sure not to word this properly so you're not sued for libel, but Basically, what happened was I was in Toronto and I wanted some stock photography to sort of spice the footage in the documentary. So I decided to get the skyline of Toronto. And so I went up into the CN Tower. And because I'm in a private residence, I have to get forms, and I filled all those out, and I dealt with the VP of communications there. And so I got the footage, and that was that. About a week later, I got a really nasty email from them, basically saying, you know, oh, we helped you so graciously and full of, anyways, not a very nice email, but basically refusing me or denying me the ability to use the footage I had shot a week before, which I found was really not cool.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does. It's bureaucracy, and, you know, I suppose it's not their fault ultimately, but it was, you know, that was a downer.
Well, luckily, I guess if we want to look on the bright side, luckily they told you early on enough. It's not like if they were telling you now, that would really suck because you've already done so much editing and stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess if you want to
look. A lot of people were fantastic, too. I mean, I contacted all the major labels. And so they're the ones that ultimately got me the interview with Korea. And I contacted, likewise, movie studios, and they're the ones that got me the MPAA's arm in Canada. And I even contacted the RIAA and, you know, got in contact with the people there. So although some, you know, there was one or two not-so-nice experiences, overall, you know, all these people were incredibly nice to deal with, and especially so where it was people like Marcus Bornford and Michael Geist. They were really just fantastic interviewees and people to organize interviews with.
Well, and my favorite on there, I have to say, and maybe it's just because I've always liked Sim, was Sumerian from Rant Radio. There's a very good section with him. First of all, he's always been the nicest guy, and what limited interaction I've had with him on Rant Radio, because for those who don't remember, I mean, first of all, a lot of people are listening to us on Rant Radio right now.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't remember, we've been on Rant Radio from day one of BenRev Radio, and even back into the old RFA, Radio Freak America, was on there as well. So we've known Sim for a long, long time, and he's a really great guy, he's a really smart guy, and he's one of those people that, you know, somebody, you can tell when somebody is, I guess, passionate, for lack of a better word, about something, they really believe in what they're saying. And he is that guy. And your interview with that, he really gets the point across, and he makes some very valid points, and he does it in such a way where it's not condescending, it's not talking down, it's not insulting, it's not ranting, ironically, for Rant Radio, for Rant Media. And we remember when it was Rant Radio, now it's Rant Media, which is cooler. So he's always been consistently like that, and I've always liked that about him. So kind of a mid-show shout-outs to Sumerian from me there. He was really, really good on there. It's probably my favorite part of it as well. So,
and I'd like to... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was done.
I was going to say, I'd like to give him a shout-out to him as well. He did something really nice for me because he lives in Vancouver, so he lives about 2,000, you know, gazillion miles away from me.
Right.
And what he offered to do is, when I contacted him, he offered to shoot all the footage by himself and mail the DV tape over to me so that I could include it in the documentary. And he did this, you know, all pretty much free of charge. So that was absolutely fantastic on his part, and I'd like to, you know, give a shout-out for him. I know I keep saying how everyone's cool and all that, but it's true. And big shout-out to him.
Yeah, that just shows how sincere of a person he is that he'd be willing to do that. That's really, really cool of him. Absolutely cool. Let's talk about his segment specifically if we can. I mean,
okay.
What he talked about, which hit very close to home for me for obvious reasons with DDP Hack Radio, was discussion on how some of these laws affect nonprofit or hobby radio stations, which is exactly what we fall into, what Rant Media falls into, you know, stations that are just playing, you know, he explained that he just wanted to play music that he is liked and couldn't find on normal radio, and that's really how they got started, you know, and Rant Radio has great industrial music and stuff like that. That's one of the things he started it on, and then the talk radio that came out of it was also fantastic, obviously, but it was just a hobby. There's no money, it was no profit, it was just because it was a hole. It was something that was missing, a gap of something that was missing out there that he decided to fill. And he went into some detail about how with these new laws that are being passed, it takes away that ability because they want so much money, you know, not even on a per license, there's a minimum. And maybe you can, I don't want to like repeat his whole segment or anything like that on here, but he basically talked about how difficult it was.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate. I mean, in the United States, when where you are, when there was a sort of similar law that was passed on royalties, which was insanely expensive.
Right.
And they say that basically as soon as that sort of law passed, or act passed, pretty much 99% of internet radio stations were pretty much wiped out, and only the ones that were heavy on commercials, the big sort of corporate ones that had lots of backing like Live 365, were the ones that really remained legal and on top, and it's right. It's unfortunate.
And of course the bootleg ones that are operating illegally, which is always going to happen, so that's the other funny thing. You know, now it's funny that back in the days it was pirate radio, you know, people that are trying to escape and fight the FCC. Now here we are.
Yeah.
We thought we'd kind of set that free with the internet, that I can come out here and I can say what I want. I can say fuckity fuck 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 and get away with it and say what I want, about who I want on here. And now here we are finding ourselves in a position where they're stopping us from even doing that or trying to, which is why it's such an important point and it's such an important thing to get out there and let people know. They're trying to silence us by strong-arming us financially. And
yeah.
It's the same thing. So.
And it's really sad because, I mean, there's all these great, you know, music tracks out there. And if you listen to real radio, and that's one of the big reasons I wanted to do this doc was because of how upset I was with commercial radio. If you listen to commercial radio, it's absolutely mind-numbing how small their playlist is. And really, internet radio is the only way because satellite radio, you know, okay, let's say Sirius or XM, they have 100 channels, which ain't half bad, although a lot of it is pretty much mainstream. But internet radio is really the only place to go if you want to listen to fresh, new, creative music. And by having, you know, such high fees like that, it's really going to kill legitimate ways of listening to new music, which we really need. Music is such a, you know, an integral part to our culture. So, yeah, that's my rant for the day.
Yeah, well, it can't be a rant unless you throw a fuck in there somewhere.
Okay. Fuck, fuck, fuck. There you go.
Oh, I'm such a foul-mouthed person.
Fucking
yeah.
Man.
Well, you know what? And that kind of, that's something else that I noticed in the documentary quite a bit, was I heard the phrase indie music quite a bit, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's not, the reason they call these stations, they have such a limited playlist, the industry term is top 40 station, because they play the same 40 freaking tracks over and over again. That's what they do. That is their playlist. We are a top 40 station. We say it play the same shit 40 times over every day.
I know, it's, I used to work at Staples, I used to put this music on, I literally drove nuts. It turned out I had to hijack the sound system at one point to play my own music just because I was literally at this, you know, millimeters close to killing an innocent customer. Bad music, man, it's really insane.
Yeah, yet, you and I were talking before the show, and you go home from work every night and watch Canadian Idol on television. So what's up with that? All right, I lied.
Yeah,
I completely made that up. Just for the record, I completely made that up. I put Seal on the spot there. He doesn't listen. I don't know if you watch Canadian Idol. Everybody knows my American Idol obsession. But I just like it because I like seeing the people sing. It's not so much the music. It's just more like, I don't know. I'm just a sucker for anything that's positive on television these days because there's so little of it. So
yeah.
Anything that people are enjoying and getting ahead and, you know, somebody's winning and you go, I guess I like that kind of stuff on TV as opposed to, oh, I don't know, the fucking news! I hate watching
news. You have a system of honor there. You watch it for the best. The only reason I watch Canadian Idol whenever I do or the dance shows they have is to watch the worst, because I enjoy.
Yeah.
I know I'm terrible. I'm worse than anyone there. But I enjoy making fun of the poor bastards that just suck ass.
That is definitely the best part of it. No doubt that is the best part. Especially, yeah, I've been watching this dancing one lately, which, oh, man. Dude went flat down on his face and like knocked a couple teeth out or some shit like that. But anyway, I digress. Actually, Decoder and I have always said that we were going to go try out for American Idol just to get on like the worst ones, just to purposely mess with them, but yeah, never.
You should.
Never going to happen.
Hey, it'd be hacking American Idol.
Hey, social engineer my way out there? Sure, I can make it happen. And I got to make sure I wear a Benrev shirt when I do it, though, get some publicity. So, now, do you think there's any difference in the U.S. versus Canada? Because that's obviously it's very Canada-centric, if that's such a word,
mm-hmm.
for obvious reasons. But did you notice many, in the film there are references to U.S. laws, but most of it does refer to, I don't know what the terms are, like different tariffs and different Canadian laws and stuff like that. Did you find a lot of differences between the two?
To be honest, Canada is basically what the U.S. was 10 years ago. And so that's how we're very similar to the U.S. And, the way that politicians think is pretty much the same, so there's lots of similarities. There are some differences, though. Downloading music in Canada is legal, thanks to a loophole, or what I consider to be a loophole in the, basically the part of the Copyright Act in Canada that dictates tariffs. Which isn't the case in the United States, but downloading movies and software in Canada is nonetheless illegal. We don't have the DMCA yet. We haven't ratified the WIPO treaties. The WIPO treaties is, by the way, what the DMCA is to some extent.
Okay.
But we're basically where the United States was 10 years ago, and that's the reason I made this movie, is because I do not want to see a law. Like, there are some good ideas in the WIPO treaties, but I don't want to see, basically, you know, it being illegal for me to watch a DVD on my Linux box, you know, this whole reverse engineering being illegal when it's for good purposes, for legitimate purposes, you know, driver support in Linux. You can't do that without reverse engineering. So it's basically, there are differences, and I'm completely marring the point, and I'm just talking on and on, so I'll stop here, but yeah, there's some small differences here.
Well, This isn't political. This is a curiosity question. Do you find that Canadian policy is driven much by American policy? For example, us pushing the DMCA, do you think that also puts more pressure that you guys now have to follow suit?
Yeah. It's been said in the U.S. by, I forgot what politician, that basically Canada was a sort of cesspool for piracy. But there is pressure. The United States is applying, is sort of holding back relationships with other countries until they ratify themselves the WIPO treaties and implementations therein. There is pressure from the United States. Fortunately, though, Canada is somewhat of, and I don't mean to, shaft the United States in any way, but Canadian politicians tend to be more moderate on the issue of piracy, and they tend to be less influenced by the $300,000 that are donated to them by the, big four entertainment companies.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one fact. Like, when I did my initial research, for example, in Canada, right, the most that a politician can be given by a citizen is $1,000 for his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
By a corporation, it used to be $1,000, but now it's been, it's been reduced to zero. Corporates aren't allowed to donate.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, before they passed amendments to that, in the 2000 elections, Orrin Hatch, who's the guy in charge of copyright reforms, so the guy who's dictating what the law is going to look like,
right,
he was paid $300,000 by the big four entertainment companies in the United States and members of the RIAA and MPAA. And
right,
these just influence your judgment, no matter where you stand. There's no way that 300 grants cannot influence your decision-making. So in Canada, we're fortunate that we don't have that. And, future elections in the U.S. should be easier because that was toned down a lot. I think it's been reduced to $1,000 there.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Well, but then there's the under-the-table stuff that goes on as well. that is the biggest corruption, the biggest problem with our government. I'm not afraid to say that. Our country is, I'm very proud of the United States and a lot of things, but we have come so corrupt in Congress with these big interests, special interest groups, and these big companies throwing money either in our faces like we're stupid, or under the table also like we're stupid, like we don't know that's happening. And the other part of that that's really people might not realize is a lot of people know that and unfortunately say, yeah, well, that's just, you know, have you ever heard the phrase politics as usual? You know, they just kind of like, yeah, well, that's the way the system is. Well, I'm not so happy to just smile and let that go. I don't mind coming out and saying it. And now I think it's even getting further because, all right, fine, the Big Four, we'll use them for an example. I'll make up that example just to go with it. They give so-and-so so much money to try to push their agenda into United States law and into, you know, making new laws and into our which is one thing, which is fine. It's corrupt here. It causes us problems. It ends up giving, you know, I've said this before on the show, we are no longer a government of the people, by the people, for the people. We're a government of the corporation, by the corporation, for the corporations. And that's a problem. And it's now getting amplified because the United States, as a world leader, now we're going to strong arm other countries, including Canada or whatever else, that we're not going to do business with you or we're not going to cooperate until you also do this. So now these bribes that are going through are forcing world policy? Hello? What the fuck? All right, I'm going to back off because we're going political, and that's one thing I don't want to change about the show. I like to stay off of that if we can. So I'm going to back away, take a deep breath, and switch gears real quick. You actually kind of said a minute ago when you were doing your research, I think it'd be naive to say you didn't have a predisposition, an idea in your mind, and opinions before you started filming this. Did you find any? Did you change very much? Did you have your eyes open to realize any things that you were surprised at yourself for?
Yes, I certainly did. Before the documentary, I was very sort of on a neutral standpoint towards the issue, and actually, no, that's wrong. I was more of a pro-user sort of guy.
Right.
And my belief before I made this documentary was that most of the piracy that was going on was being done by people who were interested in buying the music if it was good. You know, it was a sort of taste testing thing.
Right.
When I started interviewing people, and okay, again, your listeners are going to grunt at this. When I started interviewing people, what I found out was actually most people didn't care about the artist. Some did. Mm-hmm. A lot of people did, but a lot of more people didn't, and that was sort of an eye opener for me. And that almost made me want to stop the movie right now because I was really discouraged. Because originally when I decided to do this movie, it was sort of to highlight this opinion of sort of the Linux kind of guy who's informed and who this flashdot sort of mentality of the informed guy who does things ethically and who might download music but ultimately pays a lot to the artist and, you know, with due funds. And that wasn't what I saw. So that's one way my opinion changed. Another way is sort of I realized how more complex this issue is. I used to have a very black and white perspective. I used to think it was the industries versus the people. And I used to think that CDs at a store were a rip-off directly because of the recording labels. And what I realize now is that, yes, CDs are still expensive as hell, but it isn't, you know, this RIAA's fault, for instance. It's the whole group of sort of events converging together that end up in being what is a very expensive price tag, and people demanding lots of royalties, other people demanding royalties, and all this mixing up for these high price points. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think I'm more even now. I think that my perspective highlights more of the corporate interests, which I was lacking before. And I'm not paid by the corporations or anything like that. It's just, it was something that I lacked. I suppose when you're a teenager, you're sort of not too much. You're sort of anti-establishmentarian or whatever that word is. And this opened my eyes.
Well, and there is an age factor in there for sure. A lot of younger people are certainly downloading it because it's free and they don't have to pay for it. No one's denying that. That'd be naive to not say that's happening.
Yeah, and it's sad, though. I mean, like, anyways.
Well, you know what, and you kind of alluded to this, but, I mean, the simplified version is the system is flawed. The way the system delivers music has been... See, where the... there's too many middlemen. People in the middle, they see a good thing and they're like, wow, that guy makes good music, or those people make good music, and these people have money and want to pay for it. And they'll stick their hands out in the middle and they'll try to weasel their way in and get some of that money. And that's happened so much over the years, and so many people have weaseled their way in and got their hands out, that's why, like, a lot of the artists, they don't have a problem necessarily with, I'm sure they don't all want their music downloaded for free, you know, but a lot of them realize and understand that they could make as much, if not probably more, if they went with a different distribution method. But unfortunately, they have to sign labels if they really want to hit the quote-unquote big time. They're not going to get on those top 40 stations because the system will not let them get there unless they go through the system. And now we've got resources like this radio station and this radio show and others like it, Rant Radio and all these other stations out there, and that's why it's important. We're giving them that other platform to release their music and another way to get it out there. And I, for one, I've said on the show many times, iTunes is a good start and things like that where you can pay for one individual track or whatever. I don't like the overabundance of DRM in it and the limitations of it.
Yeah.
And I still happen to believe that a dollar is too much for one song.
Me too. I did some research in that.
I would pay 50 cents. That's my limit. I would rather pay a quarter, obviously. I'd be willing to pay 50 cents for a song that I like where I could use it as much as I want, copy it to 20 different I want to put it on like maybe my PDA phone, put it on an iPod, put it on another MP3 player. I've got five or six computers in this room, you know. I don't want this limiting. I can only put it on five computers ever over the life of the damn thing. That's ridiculous.
But yeah, and like for the dollar song, but like, and it goes back to your middleman thing. I tried contacting Apple's, and everyone pretty much, I was doing research into that, why it was so expensive. Because a dollar is actually a shitload for just a download that, you know, costs maybe half a cent in bandwidth, this, that.
If that, yeah.
Yeah, probably a half of a trillionth of a cent. But, and what it turns out to be, yeah, is middlemen. And not just middlemen so much as that, you know, all these people want royalties, and they're still stuck in the old way of thinking, and so they demand, you know, well, 5 cents here, 5 cents here, 5 cents here. And they have a right to it, for sure. You know, these people deserve their money. The music publishers deserve their money.
I don't know.
But,
to a certain extent.
It all adds up. And, you know, when it adds up to a lot. Apple makes only something like, what was it, 10 cents of per sale on their per dollar download?
Only
That's
10
insane.
Cents? Dude, only
yeah.
10 cents for how many millions and billions of downloads? That
but
adds
still,
up.
I mean, you know, if it was 40, 50 cents and they made 10 cents off that, it'd be a lot more decent.
Well, yeah, for sure. But I don't know. We could go into another long debate on whether or not the labels have such a right to make their money, or the licensors, I should say, because they are middlemen to me. I think if, in an ideal world, which is not going to freaking happen, let's admit it, but let's pretend, let's do, let's go to Stank World here.
Okay.
The artist.
I'm waving my fingers here to go into Stank World.
The artist. Hey, that was a quote from another famous Canadian, Mike Myers. See? Ooh.
Yeah.
See, I'm up on my Canadian trivia. You guys up there in Canada. If we lived in a perfect world, the artists could put their music on iTunes, and they could set the amount of money that they want to make on it, and even more ideally, let's set a cap on this is the most you can charge. Let's say they want 25 cents out of it, but they'll allow iTunes to sell it for up to 50. That way they make a quarter, and the other quarter goes to the artist, and it's that fucking simple. Why can't that happen? Why is that so difficult? Because there's technically, you're a band, hey, I'm going to upload it to iTunes. And guess what? If it sucks, it's not going to sell. Sink or swim on its own merit. You know? It's going to be there. People can have access to it easily. And I'm, of course, making iTunes as one example. I could be referring to anything, any
right.
company, whatever. You know what I'm getting at there. It should and could be that simple, but everybody's got their hand out.
You know, I think it is going to end up like that. You know, Magnitude, I keep saying Magnitude, and I don't want to give them bonus because, to me, they're just, you know, a company.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, where they give, you know, 50 to the artist, 50% of themselves, Something like that. I think it's going to get bigger over time, and I think that as more artists move away from the labels, and right now, I mean, let's not kid ourselves, although we hear lots of news of this happening, it's really only a small fraction of percent that do that. But as more of them move away from the labels, there'll be more momentum towards this new way of doing things, this new free market. And I say that in 20 years from now, okay, maybe not 20 years because that's too far and just depressing, maybe 10 years from now, I say that there'll be artists, like half the artists we know today, on something where we have the system of Stank World.
You missed
that's
a phone call.
Anyways.
And you missed a phone call just then.
I hope it wasn't too loud.
They'll deal with it. Screw the listeners. We don't care about them on this show.
But we could have had a social engineering thing with a telemarketer.
Screw the listeners. They'll deal with it. Oh, wait a minute. You know what? Remind me to edit that screw the listeners out.
Okay.
No, I'm going to leave that in there. It'll be funnier that way. Anyway, I'm sorry. You were saying?
No, I wasn't saying anything, actually.
Oh. Well, you know what? And actually, we've gone well over time. But just one other thing I did quickly want to say was... we've been talking mostly, at least on this show, about the music aspect, but you also touched on movies in there as well. Did you find a big difference, or were there a lot of similarities? Or I know you said legally music was different than movies and software, but other than that, were there any differences or similarities between the, let's again say, use the word, the system? Were they similar in the way that they both feel about piracy?
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed the chief of operations for the NTAA's Canadian branch, and what he gave is pretty much what the music industry gave. And movies is basically where the music industry was 3 years ago, you know, in terms of downloading. Now that bandwidth and high speed is very prominent in Canada and the United States and all Western nations.
Right.
I mean, there's still that barrier with some people, but it's a big issue now, much in the same way. And the laws are the same, the issues are the same. So yeah, I'd say, you know, what the threats are the same. Only now the MPAA is putting on, you know, lots of efforts and into shutting down these wares groups and whatnot.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, you know, the whole suing 12-year-old girls and grandmothers and all that's been well documented with all of these people trying to enforce their own. Anyway. Well, you know, and let me give you Stank's quick opinion on movies, my rant on movies.
Sure.
First of all, I can't stand watching a movie on my computer. It's just a personal thing. I don't like it. I don't like it. You know, I'd rather go on my big screen and watch it or go in a movie theater or whatever. I don't like watching it on a little screen like that. Unless when I'm traveling for work on an airplane, it's great for that. I can handle that, but I don't like watching those camera ones with the little fucking Z that floats around on the screen and shit like that. Can't stand that kind of stuff, so... I don't like watching them on the computer anyway. Secondly, here's, I know they view it as a threat. I look at it as, I think they should look at this as an opportunity. Because this is where music, the RIAA and them screwed up a few years back. When this was starting to happen, Napster, let's go back that far, they had an opportunity there that where they could have changed their modeling and their pricing structure and actually used this new medium. And right now, because they're, like, to use your phrase, 3 years behind, I think they're in the same situation where they could take advantage of this and use this, or they could shoot themselves in the foot. And I'm curious, I'm going to wait and see what happens, because right now, you can go buy a DVD when it's released, sometimes as low as $10, $10 to $15, $20 usually suggested retail. That's fair to me.
Yep.
$10 to $15 for a good movie, or what I consider good, and of course everybody has their own whatever of what they think is good, I'm willing to pay $10 to have that I can watch multiple times. You know, I do not like the region restrictions. That's a whole other topic. I wish it were completely region-free. I wish it didn't have all that region crap. But I'm willing to pay $10 to own a movie that I can watch as much as I want, when I want, and have high-quality audio, high-quality video, and extra features and stuff like that on it. Personally, I'm okay with it. I know a lot of people probably will disagree. I think $10 to go to a movie theater is also a little steep, but if you go infrequently, it's okay. You know, they can charge that. It's a market economy, and I can't fault them for that. I personally think it's a little high, but what are you going to do?
Right.
But,
well, I mean,
if they start raising the prices on DVDs and continue increasing the prices on movies, they're going to shoot themselves in the foot, and I'm going to be on this show, or some show, or maybe I'll be nowhere and everybody will have forgotten about me, which is fine too, but I'll be bitching at one of my friends and I'll say, I told you fuckers a couple years ago that you had a chance and you're going to blow it. If they end up increasing the stuff where, you know what, there's going to get to a point where I'm going to say it's not worth it to buy a DVD anymore. I'm not paying that much to go to a movie theater. And when that happens, you know what they're going to do? They're going to cry and go, oh, it's piracy that killed us. No, you fucktards. It's greed that killed you.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, okay, let's put this in, you know, different circumstance. Let's say it was 20 years ago. Right, and you were in a shop and you saw, and CDs weren't out yet, right? Let's say CDs didn't exist yet, but everyone had a CD player for some miraculous reason.
Okay.
And you saw someone selling CDs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pirated CDs, right? But CDs didn't exist yet, except this guy had them and you can play them.
Right.
Well, you know, this is a new market and no one's tapping it, you know? If they were smart, they'd make CDs, right? The companies
right.
would make CDs. And so that was a horrible analogy, but I guess what I'm trying to say is what they should do is, here's all these people pirating these movies online. I know you don't like it online, but some people,
right.
you know, they're indifferent. To me, that's a sign that there's a market there. But
exactly.
you're right, it's untapped. And they are fucking this up big time because they're not. There is no movie iTunes, right? So if they were smart, which
they're not.
They aren't. If they were smart, there would be a way to download movies, DRM. Let's say it's DRM so that, you know, they could release DVDs later on. But let's say it have movies online for $7. Right?
But if I pay to download it, why
yeah.
should I then have to pay again to get it on DVD? Let me burn my own freaking DVD.
Well, you know what?
Yeah, anyway, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to branch off of that. Go ahead.
But that's basically what I'm trying to say. You know, here's this big market. They're not tapping it. And, yes, a few years down the road, they will cry wolf or cry foul or whatever. But if they were to sell movies right now online, same time as movie theaters, there'd be a huge market. Yes, some people would still pirate it for sure. But I bet you a lot more people would buy it.
Well,
because people don't like... People like buying. People like supporting. They like it, you know?
Right, yeah. Well, to a certain extent, absolutely. I totally support... I bought Jason Scott's documentary. Absolutely, because I support it, and I hope you'll make a DVD available that I can buy from you. You know? Which you're going to sign for me, of course, and send me a signed copy. But absolutely. And they got to think how to tap this. I mean... Instead of this whole traditional way of thinking, they got to think new. They got to think outside the box. Like here's an example. I don't know if this is viable. I pay $5, $10, or something to download a DRM version of the movie that I can watch on my computer. Again, personally, I'm not doing. But when it's released on DVD, they have it on file and they mail it to me for another $5 or something. That way, I have it early. I have a digital copy, but I also get a physical DVD, which I like to have. From a collection standpoint, I kind of like to have my DVD collection that I can go browse through it and say, oh, I'm in the mood to watch this, you know?
And that sounds like a fantastic idea, and that's one thing, you know, if that were a business model right now, guaranteed, I'd pretty much watch a lot more movies than I do now, and that's how I do it. But I think the biggest problem they face right now is just it's so slow to get changes through. Like, look how long when Napster came out, it's not like they were really ignoring it. They're not complete idiots. They're sort of aware that this thing's there. It's just it takes so long for them to do all these changes. And unfortunately, they're not going fast enough, and they're really ultimately going to hurt themselves by sort of not pressuring themselves to be faster to adopt new models that embrace the Internet.
Yeah. Some of them are complete idiots, though.
Yeah, agreed.
Some of them.
Dan Glickman?
Oh, we're dropping docs now. All right, man. Well, let's see. The only other thing is I did make a note to myself that I really thought it was cool the way you did the closing credits with the ANSI art. I thought that was a nice touch and a throwback to the old, well, for piracy days where you would get the info file and you get the ANSI art with all the shouts and all the release names and thanks to this release group and et cetera, et cetera. I thought that was kind of cool. Who can we give somebody some credit for who did that art?
Yeah. His name is Zero, and I used to work with him back in the day, and he's a very good ANSI artist, and you may catch some of his art on some art packs that are online. Unfortunately, I can't give more information than that, Incredible artist.
Cool.
All right, well,
what else do we have? Did we miss anything? We were pretty thorough in all that, huh?
I have one
other little thing that kind of popped into my mind, too, is... I don't know how to politely word this, but you interviewed somebody who was part of a release group. How do you not get in trouble by putting someone's face and recording, talking about that kind of thing?
You change his name, you have no reference of him on your computer whatsoever. All your information on him is in your head and forgotten, by the way. I don't remember his phone number. I don't remember. Does he have an email address? I don't know where he lives. And you eat the tape with ketchup.
Yeah, his face is out there, man. I think I might have blurred that one.
Well, you know what? Like, we were talking about this, me and him, and you know, like, there's no reference to his real group. Mm-hmm. And you know, he said himself that he's retired, so. It's not like the FBI has face recognition, and even if they do, well, I can guarantee you here in Canada, the closest thing to face recognition is probably someone drawing on with oil on paper. So he's pretty safe.
Well, and you know what? That segment, see, watch how I do this. See, this is how you work it. That entire segment was completely fictionalized anyway for the movie, so it's really non-issue.
You know what? He was lying the whole thing, and he's a paid actor.
Exactly. See, that's what they do in the film industry, see? You're absolutely going to end up being... You're going to be the next Scorsese, man. You're going to be the next Lucas. No, not Lucas. He's a bastard. actually, you know what? You're going to laugh at this. I'm the only person who still hasn't seen that third Star Trek movie.
It's actually not that bad.
Yeah, the first two were so horrible.
Oh, yeah, guaranteed. The first one, that whole Jar Jar thing, horrible. The second one was even worse. I actually didn't see it in theaters. I rented it, and then I was glad, but then I felt stupid for spending, you know, $4 renting it.
Right.
Third one ain't that bad. Okay, you ever heard of a guy named Yul Bol? He did the Alone in the Dark movies?
Man, it sounds really familiar.
Okay, he's a guy who's so bad that he gets tax breaks because he's just that bad. He is probably one of the worst directors. I had my fish with me watching one of his movies, and it imploded. Okay? It is a horror. He is bad. Alone in the Dark is a movie you absolutely have to rent just because it's just that bad. Okay?
Wow.
And you need a good laugh. But, compared to that, you know, but the third one, if you like bad movies, I was going somewhere with this, but you know what? Just watch it, rent it, $5, not a bad, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the first Star Trek was really bad. Or, I'm sorry, Star Wars. Oh, damn it, again, I've done that. I'll get all the Trekkies haunting me for that, stalking me.
Hate mail.
Star Wars 1 was horrible. I paid and went to see it in the theater, and I really felt ripped off. Like Kevin Smith, I felt horribly ripped off. So when the second one came out, I did not go pay to see it in the theater because I already felt ripped off from the first one. I wanted to actually get my money's worth from the first movie by watching the second movie, which I thought was a little better but still pretty damn bad. If it wasn't for the Yoda fight scene, the rest of it was pretty crappy. If I wanted to watch fucking romance shit, I'd watch When Harry Fucked Sally or whatever that movie is. There's probably a porn by that name. I just made it up, but it probably already exists. When Harry Met Sally or some crap. I don't want to see all that stuff.
Like Saving Ryan's Pride.
Yeah, exactly. And I think somebody in IRC, I glanced at, said that they're making one for the Da Vinci Code. Oh, what
making
was the...
Making it what?
I don't remember what the porn joke was. The Da Vinci... It was called the Da Vinci Load. So awful. Okay, we've degraded as far as we can go on the show for this time, but we're well over time, so we're going to squeeze in a couple emails at the end of the show, but... Julian, a.k.a. Seal, a.k.a. the next big Hollywood director, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it. And those of you who haven't seen it yet, piracydocumentary.com. All right, so, again, thank you for being on the show, and we are going to do some email.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da Subscribe.com.
And helping us out on the email segment of the show this week is our good friend Droops.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me on the show, buddy.
All right. Well, let's jump into some email here. Our first email this week comes from WebX7. I can't think of any other way to pronounce that. So WebX7 says, "Hey, I would like to request documents from my local courthouse on a friend of mine that was arrested. Does anyone have any idea on how I would do this? I would prefer free, but if I have to pay for copy costs at my courthouse or something, I can live with that. Thanks." And I believe this person also posted in the forums. Did you see that thread out there, Droopy?
I did not, Mr. Stinky.
No, okay. First of all, theoretically, you should be able to go to the courthouse where the filing is or where the filing happened or whatever and request copies of it. But I've never done that myself, so I can't say whether that's true or false. I would think that you should be able to go there because it's a matter of public record. So I would think you should be able to go there and get copies at, for a fee of, I don't know, a buck a page, I would imagine. I don't know, maybe two. I don't know. But you're better off going online. The only one that I'm familiar with is called Pacer, P-A-C-E-R. And if you do a Google search, you should find it. But it's pacer.psc.uscourts.gov. But just do a Google search for Pacer and courts or Pacer and legal or something like that, and you'll find it. And this is the one that I use to look up information about Decoder's case. And Decoder confirmed that, yes, that Pacer was the one that he knew about as well. So you go on there. They do charge you, I think. I don't think it was very much, maybe 10 cents a page or something like that to download. So you can do a search and find what you want. The person's name usually is what it's filed under if you don't know the docket number, case number, whatever. But you should be able to get it. Now, they don't always put stuff on immediately. So, I mean, if he has a court case in the morning, don't expect it to be there that night or possibly even that week. But if you keep watching and keep searching for it, you can find it there. If you really, really need the information, you know, contact a lawyer. Now, they're almost definitely going to charge you, but they have full access to everything. And maybe maybe you get lucky, maybe they'll only charge you copying costs or access costs or something like that. Who knows? So it depends on how bad you want it. Let's see, what else do we have in here? I don't have too much time because we had such a long main topic tonight, so I'm going to skip through a couple of these short emails. Oh, here's one of our good friends here from the moderating team. We got an email from Booter. Booter's our home dog.
Did Booter ask how to hack?
A fellow redneck. No, not exactly how to hack. Actually, he sent an email following up on a conversation from a previous episode, and let me just read it. I guess it says, referring back to you and Rax's conversation on episode 151 about Moore's Law, which is, of course, that computing power is doubling every 18 months. Is that what it is?
Yes.
There's a company out there, and Rax and I were talking about disk space, more to the point. There's a company out there claiming that they will have 1.2 petabyte drives in 4 to 5 years for only about $750. I guess we'll have to wait and see if they can pull it off, but although you could store all the prawn in the world, who feels like waiting 2 to 5 years for a fucking defrag? So, Booter, thank you for the email. But listen, I gotta say this. Droops, I don't know how you feel about this. I don't know if I'm alone on this one, but I'm just gonna come out and say nobody loves prawn more than me. I like prawn as much as the next guy. Don't get me wrong, right? But I've never really been one to stash porn, like store a bunch of porn locally on a drive in any kind of quantity. I've never really felt the need for that because, I mean, I can't even think of any prawn whatsoever that I have. I mean, other than those movies that you and I made. But other, like, any downloaded movies or downloaded prawn, I can't think of any of it. You know, just our personal stuff. But I digress. So,
did you put that personal stuff up on YouTube?
Well, I've been meaning to. Maybe by the time the show airs, it'll be out there.
Good deal.
But, you know, there's whatabigcock.com.
Yes.
That one's out there. But other than that, no, I don't think we put anything else out. And let me tell you why I say that. Here's my thought process. So tell me what you think about this, Droops. My thought is that the internet is full of fucking prawn! I can't go anywhere to any website without stepping in prawn. Getting bukkake stuck to my shoe everywhere I go. So I really don't feel the need to stash 1.2 petabytes of prawn. Of course, I'm joking. I know Buddha was joking, too. But do you have a prawn stash, Droops? Be honest.
Well, I used to have quite a prawn stash.
But?
Because sometimes you maybe are away from your internet, and you need some prawn on your laptop. You know, for perusal.
Okay.
But I'm not very good at this whole computer thing, and my wife kept finding it, so I don't have it anymore.
Oh, that's the greatest story ever. Well, I guess... See, I just can't even picture not having internet access anymore. It's 2006. Between war driving and free access, free Wi-Fi, and my cell phone PDA, I have access always.
Well, what if
always.
You're on a long road trip, you need a little porn?
Okay, well, what, you act like they don't still make Playboy or something. Buy a freaking magazine.
It's hard to drive and hold the magazine, you know.
But driving and looking at the laptop is much safer.
Well, I have the truck computer, so I can just put it on the little screen.
Oh, God. That's a Hack TV video waiting to happen. That's like Hack TV really, really way underground.
Do you mind if I tell a story?
Go for it. Hack TV Prawn. That's going to be our new series.
On the way back from
Arizona. Is this going to be a not safe for work story, like really bad?
No.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
On the way back from Interzone, we're driving in our T-Bird.
I'm already laughing, and I don't know the story. That's.
If you're familiar with it, the T-Bird is really hard to see out of because it's built to be ridden around without a top on it. When you put the top on it, it's hard to see.
Okay.
So there's not really, like, a lot of viewing space from outside of the vehicle.
Okay.
And we're bored, and we've watched all the movies we brought, but I brought a relationship video that was very graphic with us. And we decided to watch this.
Wait a minute, wait, hold. A relationship video? What, like Kama Sutra, kind of like how to make better love or something?
Yes.
Oh, no! Okay, continue.
So we're driving along, and we notice these rednecks are beside us.
We being...
Who came with me to Interzone.
Okay.
Mrs. Droops.
Right. I'm trying to clarify to the listeners, because they think it's me and you right now.
Okay, I'm sorry. So, my wife and I are enjoying a nice relationship video, and these rednecks pull up beside of us, and they're honking the horn and, you know, waving their beers and having a good time, you know, watching our relationship video.
Right.
So I put the hammer down, blow past those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a rule, I only get one speeding ticket per road trip, and I'd already gotten one, so
okay.
It wasn't going to happen again.
Gotcha.
So we're driving along, and I'm pretty engrossed in the video. And this trucker cuts me off, and I'm like, mother. So I noticed that we're boxed in by truckers.
Oh.
And I said, oh, my God, they're probably watching the video. And I don't know how they can see it from where they were, but they have a very good vantage point from in those trucks, and they can see everything.
You've got to be kidding.
No. Well, like, the clothes were still on. It's just the video, the clothes were off.
Hmm.
So I pull out my scanner, turn it on.
I was going to say, that's when it's nice to have a good old-fashioned CB radio.
This is true. So I didn't have a CB. I had my scanner, so I was listening to the truckers, and sure enough, they had blocked us in. So anyway, I lit up my scanner, and I held it out the window so they would see that we were listening to them.
Right.
And they thought that was hilarious.
That is hilarious. That's the greatest story ever told on VinRev Radio.
Well, I'm not done with it.
Oh, no. It gets better?
In Mississippi, your county is written on your license plate.
Right.
So they knew that we were from whatever county, Mississippi.
Right.
So they start talking and asking us questions and what's happened to brake light to answer. Okay, we just got into Georgia.
Right.
We had gone to look around some stuff. So they were going to Tupelo, which is not very far from where I live. In fact, we took the same exit they did. And they were like, you know, they wanted to watch the video because they were bored. And we got to talking, and because it's very easy to communicate with just the taps. Like, they would ask a question, they'd say, are you from here? And you wouldn't tap, and they'd say, from here, from here, from here. And so they got to where it was right, and we tapped. And we had a nice little conversation with them. Well, they said, hey, you know, we're going to Tupelo. You'll stay with us. You'll make it through, you know, the whole way, real fast, real safe. So we said, okay. Well, now it was like Smokey and the motherfucking Bandit. There was about 9 or 10 18-wheelers going to Tupelo, and we were in a convoy with them. And we positioned the laptop so they could see it better.
They're watching porn in another moving vehicle next to them on a road trip convoy of 18-wheel trucks. How did you... Alright, wait, are you... Is this a real story? Are you fucking with me?
This is a completely real story.
I can't believe that... How did you never tell me this story before, like, off the air? Like, I can't believe that this... You'd have a story like this that you held back.
I haven't held it back from many people.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, they do their business, and they watch us, and, like, they...
Wait a minute. What do you mean they do their business?
Their business of blocking for us.
Oh, okay. Gotta be careful.
Like, you know how you'll pull up and like 2 18-wheelers will be drag racing at 10 miles below the speed limit?
Right.
They would tell those guys to get the fuck out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So that we could truck on through. And we sped like bitches through the construction zone that I got my ticket in previously. And in Birmingham, you have to get off the main road and kind of go through town, and they couldn't really make all the lights. There were so many trucks.
Right.
So we kept having to pull off on the side of the road and wait on them. But we trucked on through with them. It was a good time. So Prawn and CB radio is actually a really good thing to have on road trips.
Is that the moral of the story?
That's the moral of the story.
Wow, that was like a show and tell segment, which we don't officially do. But that was a good story. That was pretty good stuff.
Now, if I'd have had a pentabyte drive in my truck computer, and like a nice 30-inch display behind the truck...
Well, see, that's what you got to do next time you go to a conference. You got to actually set up a big widescreen HD in the back window so you can get the convoy going again.
And then we'll just get the convoy going.
Exactly. Sounds like a plan. Well, anyway, back to this email. The whole prawn thing. Again, hey, buy a magazine, you know, or take the video with you, a DVD or whatever, but... I've never been without internet access. Like, if I want it bad enough, I'll find it. And it's not that difficult. We all know that. So, to me, prawn is... I can't think of it as a non-renewable resource.
Well,
it's
see,
out there everywhere. And it's
financially stable. Let's take a guy that isn't.
War driving is free.
The bills throw the money to pay for his internet the next month. And when you have no internet, there's nothing else to do but looking for it.
War driving.
What if they don't have a laptop? You're not putting a petabyte drive.
Well, then what are they putting their porn on?
Like, they have internet one month, the next month they can't pay the bill.
There's free dial-up. I don't want to hear this. You're making up excuses.
Prawn on dial-up is mystery. Remember that, Stinky? Remember back in the day?
Hey, it doesn't have to be video.
Images still suck.
Well, whatever. All I'm saying is, it's not gas, it's porn. It's renewable. It's not a non-renewable resource like gasoline.
I'm just saying I like to keep the ones I like.
Dude, you've never met a prawn you didn't like.
Yes.
Anyway. All right, let's see. We can do at least one more email here real quick. Next email comes from Digital Galileo, who says, first off, I love the show and keep up the good work. Regarding recording on the iPod. Okay, here we go. I asked about recording on the iPod. Droops, maybe you can back me up on this. All I had was a simple fucking question. Can you record voice on an iPod? I don't care about modification. I don't care about iPod Linux. I don't care about buying a third-party app. Can you buy an iPod from the Apple Store, walk out, take it out of the box, put batteries in it, and record your voice? And somebody says, Digital Galileo, you can record on an unmodified iPod, but at very low quality. iPod Linux has a recording function that allows you to record at a much higher bitrate. There! That's it!
There's no microphone in an iPod.
Is there a microphone jack?
If you have iPod Linux on there, it still doesn't matter. You still have to have a microphone.
But is there a microphone jack?
No.
Well, then how do you record your voice?
You can buy a little Belkin, makes one that I have, that has a microphone that'll plug into your iPod.
That's what I said, so there's a microphone jack to plug in a microphone.
It's not a normal jack.
It's some kind of proprietary thing?
Yes.
Oh, how... That is so Apple. That is so Apple. Fuck. Anyway, but it can be done without a weird modification. It's just having the hardware.
Yes, and iPod Linux, like Apple limits how you the quality of the recording, but with the iPod Linux, you can change that to whatever you want.
Right, which is what he's saying. Which is, that's it.
Yeah.
Straight answer, simple question, two episodes ago. Was that so fucking hard to get an answer? Why was that? Oh, anyway, whatever. Thank you, Digital Galileo, for that.
You rock, man.
Yep. All right, well, Droops, help me close out the show. What do you say?
All right, buddy.
I'll go ahead and give some shouts. Shouts to, let's see, to Viati, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, and Willikin. Both of them sent in some email, so thank you for those. And to our first guest, Seal, which leads into the site of the week, which is piracydocumentary.com. Now, Droops, did you have any shouts?
I have two, actually. One shout-out to the people at CarolinaCon. It was awesome meeting Telco Bob and all the crew.
Yeah, I forgot. You know, we don't have time to do that. Next episode, we're going to do some CarolinaCon talk.
Anyway, so thank you to all you guys for putting that on. And the second one is to Decoder, because talking about that abacus was the funniest fucking thing I've heard in a long time.
Decoder's so freaking funny. Yeah, I liked slipping that in there. That was pretty fun stuff. All right, so, piracydocumentary.com, site of the week. Email us, radio@binrev.com. Our closing music this week, this is actually one of my favorite songs that one of the best songs I've heard in a long time. It's from, the group is called Futuristic Sex Robots, and the track is called Snakes on a Plane. For those of you who don't know, from the upcoming Snakes on a Plane movie, this is a song that they submitted hoping that it would make it to the soundtrack, and I don't think their decision's been made yet, but I hope it does because it's awesome. So enjoy that. And go Brazil! World Cup fever, baby! Brazil's going to take it all! And that's going to be it. So, Droops, I will make sure we have some time next week for CarolinaCon discussion, which has been in the forums and something we need to spend some time on. But until then, we'll tell everybody that we will see them next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
I was flying on a plane to California when I met this guy whose name was Sammy J. Got a gin and tonic, sapphire Bombay. Sammy said, I prefer number 10 Hickory. After a few, he looks me right in the eye. Keep it on the DL, I'm with the FBI. I'm on this plane to escort this guy. He could take down the mafia if he testifies. And then I felt safe, like nothing could go wrong. Oh shit, there's a snake coming out that bitch's thong. I remember the time Nas spoke to me. He said, life's a beat, and deputy. I'm down on my drink, getting ready to die. But Sammy J stands up and says, not tonight. I got a job to do. Enough is enough. I've had it with these motherfucking snakes and stuff. Gonna get this guy to court, safe and sane. I want these motherfucking snakes off this motherfucking plane. At this point, I passed out after a handful of Xanax. And when I woke up, we were safe in LAX. What? On the plane, we got snakes up on a plane. On a plane, we got snakes.
Snakes on a motherfucking plane. Plane. I went to the bathroom to make a stink. When this motherfucking snake came up through the sink, and a flight to hell, no time to think. Gotta get to the cart and have another drink. I'm taking every tube and inside every pipe. How could this be the end of my life? If airport security is letting me bring a knife, I could make it home alive to my best friend's wife. They're coming up through the floor. I got bit on my hand and I'm feeling sore. Unhinged this jaw to take in my head. I wish that it was Jennifer Connelly instead. What? On the plane, we got snakes up on a plane. On a plane, we got snakes.
Snakes on a motherfucking plane. Plane.
What if your dick was as big as the ocean? It'd be the only snake not encroaching on your seat when you get them free nuts. Anaconda's chomping all the fly butts. When I looked around, wish I'd taken the train. There were snakes all over the motherfucking plane. Or better yet, snakes in your brain.
must be racing like it's smoking cocaine. Plane sack with snakes, the flight's nonstop. I got more butts than a cigarette shop. Just another day on the TWA, sucking out poison. Don't say that I'm gay.
What?
On the plane, we got snakes up on a plane.
What?
On a plane, we got.